Good morning, everyone. In his explanation to the nation and the world earlier this week, the president attempted to confine his remarks, understandably, narrowly, to one nation in North Africa.
In this particular country, Libya, at this particular moment, we were faced with the prospect of violence on a horrific scale.
Well, we don't necessarily want to argue with the president. The speech was all about Libya,
to
be expected. But there have been many particular moments in many particular countries throughout the region facing the prospect of violence. And we wanted to explore that for a moment. Raja Althabani is a Yemeni-American. She joins us from her home here in New York. Raja, what do you hear when you witness the president talking about the situation in Libya?
I hear lots of worry, and what I'm waiting for as a Yemeni is to hear the same rhetoric and same concern and same dialogue being expressed about Yemen. He's been pretty silent about Yemen.
Well, we could actually take out the word Libya from that speech and insert the word Yemen. This is what it would sound like.
In this particular country, Yemen, at this particular moment, we were faced with the prospect of violence on a horrific scale.
Gregory Johnson joins us, a Yemen expert at Princeton University. He joins us from Cairo. Professor Johnson, is it possible to take out Libya and insert Yemen in any realistic way and compare the two situations?
I don't really think that there is. I mean, there's a lot of surface similarities between these two countries. They're both Arab, both ruled by long-serving autocratic leaders and so forth. But on the ground, they're actually quite different places. And what works in Libya won't necessarily work in Yemen. In Libya, we have a case where military intervention can actually do a great deal of good and save people's lives. That's not the case in Yemen. Yemen needs the U.S. to do a great many things, but intervening militarily is not one of them.
That's Gregory Johnson, who's a Yemen expert at Princeton University, on the line from Cairo, Egypt. So, Raja Althabani, you've been on the program before. I remember the sense of hope and expectation when you joined us before, thinking about what might happen in Libya or in Yemen, in your country. You're on your way back there. What do you expect to see?
I'm still very, very optimistic and hopeful. I am, I'll honestly admit, I am excited, but I am also very, very nervous, considering all the news that has been coming out this week and last week and the casualties and the numbers injured. President Saleh is obviously not taking this easy at all. But I do hope, I'm sure that, you know, his resistance isn't going to impede or in any way affect the resistance of the people, and it's only going to strengthen it. You know, all a revolution needs is a martyr, you know, so, know, the more the martyrs, you know, the stronger and more motivated these revolutionaries become.
It's a grisly human calculus there. But, Raja, would you buy what Gregory Johnson just said, that this is a one-off unique situation, Yemen, and can't really be compared to Libya?
Completely agree. Yemen's instability has definitely caused more concern for the U.S. That's clear. This does not necessarily suggest that there should be any military action taken on the part of the U.S. Although Yemenis are not anti-American, they certainly are anti-occupation or invasion. So any implication of the U.S. military support in Yemen would be misinterpreted by the Yemeni people as a sign of incursion or some sort of invasion. And any involvement or force by the U.S. military can also be used as ammunition by people there who are inflicting the injustice in these attacks and killings. And they're more likely to claim that they are now not only fighting for Yemen's unity, but against an external force and threat of maybe imperialism or something of the sort.
That's Roger Althabani, a Yemeni-American student at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Gregory Johnson of Princeton University. Is that the main reason why you feel that military intervention is a mistake for the United States in Yemen? Do you agree with Raja? Or is there are other things to complicate it. I mean, Yemen is, the people of Yemen are very highly they're very armed, and there's also a number of extremist groups and worries about Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Does that complicate it as well?
Right, Celeste. I think Raja makes some excellent points, and I completely agree with her. I think for the U.S. to go in militarily, the U.S. would be creating enemies where there aren't any, giving more and more of a push for al-Qaeda. And so what you'd see is al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula getting stronger as a result of the U.S. going in, not getting weaker. What I think the U.S. has to do is, I think, President Obama, Secretary of State Clinton, and certainly the U.S. ambassador in Yemen need to be making some much stronger statements. Up to this point, they've been very, very tepid in really condemning the violence and really pushing behind the scenes for President Saleh to step down sooner rather than later, because the longer that President Saleh tries to hold on to power, the more chaotic Yemen is going to be and the more space this is going to open up for violent extremist groups like al-Qaeda who are attempting to carry out attacks against the U.S.
Well, interesting. Gregory Johnson from Princeton University. So Yemen is more like Iran, in a sense, where U.S. intervention and a higher U.S. profile or a too high U.S. profile would raise a kind of specter of the great Satan at work.
Well, it's too high of a profile militarily, but there are a lot of very positive positive steps the U.S. can take on the diplomatic front, both in speaking out publicly. I think Yemenis for a long time have been very, very concerned that in Yemen, the United States has made a choice to put what it considers to be its security interests ahead of its values. And I think a lot of Yemenis would like to see that reversed. They'd like to see the Secretary of State, the U.S. ambassador, making statements about how the U.S. supports the process in Yemen, how it supports the people's right to free assembly for democratic elections and things of that nature, as well as for the U.S. to be working behind the scenes to push Saudi Arabia and other regional actors to help President Saleh find some sort of an exit strategy. So there's positive things the U.S. can do diplomatically, but on the military front, it would all be negative, and I think it'd be a catastrophic mistake.
Well, agreement there with President Obama's approach to Yemen vis-a-vis the situation in Libya. Gregory Johnson is a Yemen expert at Princeton University who spoke with us from Cairo, Egypt. Thank you so much. So, Raja, let's go out on you here. You're on your way back to Yemen. You plan to shoot a documentary. What's the theme of your movie that you expect to find?
I'm sure it's, you know, I was originally heading out there to show a movie on child labor in Yemen, since it's rampant. And of course, I will be filming, trying to get as much raw footage of the uprisings, of the protests, of whatever I could. Considering that all Western journalists have been deported,
right,
or most have been deported.
Well, so good luck, Raja. You'll probably find that movie in the edit room when you get that raw footage back. Raja Al-Thabani is a Yemeni-American BA student in human rights and international development at John Jay College of Criminal Justice on her way back to Yemen to find out what's going on there. Thanks, Raja.
And it's now 15 minutes past the hour. Let's check in on some other top stories. We're getting a clear picture of how bad the situation is right now in Japan. Officials say there's enough radioactive water leaking at the troubled Fukushima nuclear complex to fill two Olympic-sized swimming pools. This morning, the seawater outside the plant was found to contain more than 3,000 times the usual amount of radiation. That's the highest rate yet. Plant's owners say they'll completely scrap the site once the situation is under control. And union battles are back in the news. A bill that would strip 350,000 public workers in Ohio of their collective bargaining rights is now up for a vote in the Republican-controlled state house. The bill bans workers from striking, does away with automatic pay increases, and eliminates collective bargaining for health care and pension benefits. Also, for the second time, a Wisconsin judge has halted the implementation of a new collective bargaining law in that state until she rules on its illegality. A Supreme Court ruling makes it harder to sue prosecutors for misconduct. In a 5-4 vote, the justices stripped a $14 million award away from a New Orleans man who came within weeks of being executed for a murder that he did not commit. The U.S. Department of Education has fined Virginia Tech University $55,000 for its response to the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. 4 years ago, a VTech student shot and killed 32 students and faculty. The Department of Education says the school waited too long to notify students. And California's 3-year drought is now officially over. Officials say reservoirs in the state are now above normal after a snow-filled winter. You're listening to The Takeaway. You can respond to anything that you hear at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Coming up, lawmakers still arguing over the budget. In fact, it's come down to the wire. We may, in fact, see a government shutdown. Todd Willick joins us to explain.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.